We were in the middle of the story of Givon and Shemesh b'Givon Dom. Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud is where we were up to. Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud. Let's start from Pasuk Chet. Perek Yud, Pasuk Chet. Bayau Yehoshua min al Gilgal, hu v'chol am hamuchamaymo. Yud is 10:10, but we're going to start from verse 7 or 8.
Oh, okay.
A couple of verses back. Bayau Yehoshua min al Gilgal, hu v'chol am hamuchamaymo, v'chol gibore hachayo. Yeshua, we're going back to the war. Back on Givon and the four kings and the five kings we talked about last class. Can't say last week, as it was a month ago, but last class. And what I want to focus on today and next week, and hopefully we'll do this this week and next week, and that'll be and then we'll move forward, is the battle itself, specifically the miraculous nature of this campaign. So Yehoshua gathers his army together, his entire army, Am HaMilchama. Doesn't say he took the whole nation, it says he took the whole Am HaMilchama. In other words, the active soldiers. It's not clear that he took all 600,000 soldiers with him on an overnight trek for a surprise attack against Givon. But he certainly took a large number, Chol Giborei Achayil. Vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua. On the way, God says to him, Al tira mehem. Don't be afraid of them. Ki biyadcha nitatim. I have given them over into your hands. Much similar type of encouragement that God gives to Moshe before his battle against Sichon and Og. Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah,
I really
do.
Oh. What were you doing for the last 15 minutes?
Debating whether we should call you.
Whether we should call you. That was special.
I thought you were using the time for review. All right. Suzanne is sitting there looking completely perplexed.
You were on time.
So you're getting to my time.
All right, so, okay, quick review. Remember in chapter 9 and the alliance made between Givon, the people of Givon, and Yehoshua. We spent a number of weeks, if not months, discussing that alliance. In the aftermath of that alliance, there is a paradigm shift in the relationship between the nations, the indigenous nations and the city-states of Canaan, and the conquering Israelite army. The paradigm shift is because suddenly there's an alliance between Israel and the local armies of Givon. Five cities, essentially, four cities that have come together under the banner of Givon. And suddenly Yehoshua is establishing alliances, military foothold in the center of the country. That frightens the Amekanan, and so the first group to organize in response are the southern cities of Yerushalayim, Devir, Lachish, the list of four or five of them in the beginning of the Perek. You know what? Where are we going to do this? Let's just start reading from the beginning of the Perek and it'll all come back. Vayehi chishmo et Adoni Tzedek melech Yerushalayim ki lachad Yehoshua et ha'ay v'ayachimah kasher asal yiricho lo malka when Adoni Tzedek, king of Yerushalayim, remember we had a discussion about king of Yerushalayim, Adoni Tzedek, Malki Tzedek, from Sefer Breshit, when he heard that Yehoshua had conquered Ai and destroyed it, v'chi hishlimu yoshvei givonet Yisrael v'yu b'kibam, and at the same time, within the same time frame, made an alliance with the people of Givon. So between the conquest of Yericho and Ai and the alliance with Givon, suddenly this entire center of the country is controlled by Israel, or the Israelites. Probably the most strategic moves, even though it wasn't intentional, but for Yehoshua it was a very powerful strategic move. Givon was a great city, great empire, or relatively speaking, a great power, and therefore they were very frightened. Certainly much bigger than Ai. Ai was a nothing, it's an insignificant speck. If you remember the reports of the spies, don't bother with the whole people. Ai was nothing compared to Givon. And therefore, Vayishlach Adoni Tzedek Melech Yerushalayim et El Hoham Melech Hebron, Vel Piram Melech Yarmut, Vel Yafir Melech Lachish, Vel Dvir Melech Eglon. He sends messengers to four neighboring cities, and they aren't such neighboring cities. If you think about them, Yerushalayim, Hebron, Dvir, Lachish, Yarmut, this entire region, essentially it's alliance between all of the major powers in the area today known as Hare Yehuda. From Yerushalayim to Hebron and Debir, which is near this whole southern region of the mountain range. And in this message he says, Alu elai v'izuni v'nakel et Giv'on ki shlimet Yehoshua v'et b'nei Yisrael. Their decision is to go to war against Givon, against the people of Givon. So these five Amorite kings gather together. Remember the comparison that we made between the battle of the four kings and the five kings in Bereshit to the battle of the four kings and the five kings here, because it's this alliance of five kings against the four cities of Givon. Melech Yerushalayim, Melech Hebron, Melech Yarmut, Melech Lachish, Melech Eglon, Hem v'chom machanehem, v'yachanu al Givon v'yelachamu aleh. The campaign is against the city of Givon. V'yishlechu anshei Givon al Yehoshua al machaneh ha-Gilgalam. So the people of Givon sent a message to Yehoshua in Gilgal. Lemor al teref yadecha mi'avadecha. Essentially to say to him, don't abandon us now in our moment of need. Remember the alliance. Don't abandon us. Ale elenu mehera, v'oshia lanu v'ozrenu, come quickly, help us, save us, ki nikpitzu elenu kol machai ha-emori yoshvei ha-har. All of the Amorites in the mountains have come to wage this battle. And that's essentially true. If you think about it, Yerushalayim, Hebron, Debir, Lachish, and Yarmut, those are the Amorite tribes, the Amorite nations in the mountains. It's exactly what you have. So remember we talked about the two strategic challenges that Yehoshua faces, and one of them being alliances or the unification of the local city-states in the region. Here you have the first such alliance of the Malchei HaDarom, as they're called, the southern kings. So Yeshua moves his army in the middle of the night to come quickly to the aid of Giv'on. He takes the Giborei Achayil, he takes his warriors, he takes Am HaMilchama, he doesn't take the entire camp, but he certainly takes a significant part of his army. And on the way, Vayomer, this is where we started, Vayomer Hashem al Yehoshua, Al Tira Mehem. Don't be afraid. I will give them into your hands. You will destroy them. You will be successful. Yeshua approaches in a surprise attack. Kol halayla alamina Gilgal. He got there. He was able to surprise them because he traveled through the night. They weren't expecting, but the camp of Malki Tzedek and his armies are sitting here encamped against Givon. When they came to surprise Givon, I assume by day, just in time for Givon to send the message to Yehoshua, by the morning, the next morning, they're expecting to battle a city of Givon, maybe a couple of united cities of Givon, but they certainly weren't expecting the entire army of Yehoshua to find their way in the middle of the night into the camp of Gilgal. But that was Yehoshua's strategic move, to move the entire camp under the cover of darkness and to do so quickly in one night. That's the key strategic piece in this campaign. Pasuk Yud. Vayuhumam Hashem lifnei Yisrael. God confounded them, confused them before Israel. Vayakem makah gdola b'givon. He smote them a great mighty blow. That's a good word. Mighty blow. Vayirdefem, he chased them. Derech male bet choron, south. You have a map, actually. I think you have a map. You have this map? You saved it from a month ago? Yes? Excellent. Yes? No?
Yes.
I have.
I have it.
In the back of the source page, yeah. What you have in the back is a map of the battle campaign. So the four cities, Hebron, Yerushalayim, five cities, Yerushalayim, Hebron, Yarmut, Lachish, and Eglon, Lachish, they attack to Givon, Yerushalayim to Givon. Yehoshua moves. Do you see where I am on the map?
Yeah.
The dark single line is the original offensive attack. Yehoshua's, the dotted line, moves his army from Gilgal by Evel Shittim, right here, up through to Gilgal in the middle of the night. From Gilgal to Givon in the middle of the night, and starts the counteroffensive. Pushes the army from Givon to Male Bet Choron. Male Bet Choron is just northwest of Givon, and from there he turns the chase southward towards Ayalon, or into Emek Ayalon. Emek Ayalon, of course, if you've been to Israel and you've ever driven out near Latrun, it's a big valley. Right, that's Emek Ayalon.
Isn't that in the Haradar? That's a different place. It's in the same valley. It's not close.
It's got this big tank sitting on a pedestal.
Yeah.
Same valley. That's Emek Ayalon, right there. That's where this is taking place. They come down from Givon into the valley. It's right near Shalavim, into Shalavim, and you come down into this hill goes down into from Bet Choron down into Emek Ayalon, and from there he continues the campaign. Vayardefem derech male Bet Choron vayakem ad Azeka ve'ad Makeda. You can see these places on the map. Azeka, Makeda. He's pushing them southwest. He's pushing them southwest. Vahi binusam mipnei Yisrael, as they're running away, heim bimorad bet choron, as they're coming down from morad bet choron, the hill, the slope, coming down from bet choron into this valley, v'ashem ishlich alehem avanim gdolot min ha-shemayim ad azeka, and suddenly they got caught in this massive hailstorm. Vayamutu rabim ashemetu ba'avnei habarad masher hagu b'nei Yisrael b'charav. The hailstorm destroyed more of the enemy than Israel's swords. This was they're running for their lives, and suddenly the skies opened up on them, and
did the Jewish people die also?
Evidently not.
They went in between.
Evidently not. Pasuk Yud-Bet. Az yidaber Yehoshua laHashem b'yom tet Hashem et ha'amori lifnei b'nei Yisrael. Then spoke Yehoshua to God on the day that God gave the Amorites into his hands of B'nai Yisrael. Vayomer le'enei Yisrael, he said, in the presence and the eyes of all of Israel, Shemesh b'givon dom, v'yareach b'emek ayalon. One of the most famous phrases in Tanakh, the sun will stand, or the sun stood in, it's actually a command, dom, stand. Let the sun stand in Givon, and the moon in the valley of Ayalon. Vayidom Hashemesh v'yareach amad. Indeed, the sun stood and it was silent, meaning it didn't move, and the moon also stood. Ad yukom goy oivav, until a nation will destroy its enemies. Alavi k'tuva al Sefer Hayashar. This story is written in some book called Sefer Hayashar.
Ve'amod. It isn't. It is or it isn't?
It is. Halohi ktuva.
Oh,
it says, is this not?
It's written in the form of a question. Okay. Meaning, this is written in the Sefer Hayashar. V'yamad l'shemesh b'chatzi ha'shamayim. The sun stood in the middle of the sky. V'lo atz lavo ki yom tamim. And it did not set as it had in days past, or in full days. V'lo haya k'yom ahu lefanav v'acharav lishmo Hashem b'kol ish ki Hashem nilcham liYisrael. Thus was an unprecedented event in the annals of history. God would listen to the commands of man. V'yashav Yehoshua b'chol Yisrael limo al machaneh haGilgal. Yehoshua then brings everybody back to the camp in Gilgal. And the continuation of the battle is essentially what we call cleanup. The battle is over. The rest of it is now to go literally city by city and clean up in the aftermath of the victory of the campaign. This is without question the largest military victory to date in Sefer Yehoshua. Up until now, his military campaigns have been against one city, Yericho, and now Ai, and then Ai. This is a campaign against the united forces of five major city-states in the southern region of Israel. Vayanusu chameshet hamalachim ha'ela vayechab'u b'me'ara b'makedah. The five kings went and hid in the caves. Remember the parallel to the story of the four kings and the five kings in Yehoshua, where they go and they hide in the pits until the battle was over. Here they're hiding in the caves. Vayigad lo Yehoshua lemor, nimtzu chameshet hamalachim nechba'im b'me'ara b'makedah. Yeshua was told that the five kings, he found out, they had good intelligence, he found out exactly where these five kings were hiding. Vayomer Yehoshua, golu avanim gdolot api ha-me'arah, v'yifkidu aleha anashim l'shomram. Guard them, make sure, hold them until I get there, put five stones over the caves, lock them in. V'atem al ta'amodu, v'itfu acharei oyveichem, v'zinavtem otam. And he says the army, who was waiting by these five kings, obviously, for Yeshua to come and deal with the five kings, he says, don't wait by the five kings. Trap them. Put some guards there to make sure they don't go anywhere. And then you go finish the campaign. Yeshua is very sensitive to the advantage of time. Time right now is on his side. Because the enemy is in the retreat. He's on the retreat. But he can only take advantage of that retreat moment in a short window. He doesn't want to let them regroup.
Is the sun still standing?
No, now we're past. This is days later. That was just the one moment of the initial campaign to break the enemy, and now the rest of it takes place over the next little while. Vayikir chalot Yeshua v'nei Yisrael ahakotam makah gdola ma'od ad tumam. The remnants, the scattered ones, whoever was left out of the initial campaign, they went home into their, or started to run home to their fortified cities. So the goal now becomes to go into each of these fortified cities and clean up. Ve'yishuvu kol ha'am el ha'machanel Yehoshua makeda b'shalom v'lo charatz l'bnei Yisrael l'ish et l'shono. The camp comes back to Gilgal in peace. V'lo charatz l'bnei Yisrael l'ish et l'shono. No man wet his tongue against Israel. Phrase which we are familiar with from Makat B'chorot, from Makat B'chorot, lo yechratz kelav l'shono, from Makot Mitzrayim. V'yom Yehoshua after that was all done, then they go back and they deal with the five kings. Take out these five kings. Five kings. Yeshua gathered the elders of Israel together. He brings over the generals, the captains who had gone with him into war. In a demonstrative act of superiority of battle, sort of very symbolic act, which I guess meant much more to the local population of Canaan than anything else, which was to take the five kings, put them on the floor, and have the captains put their foot on their necks, as if to subjugate them, as if to say, we have conquered you. And the message to the Canaanites was very clear. Do not be afraid, do not be dismayed, be strong, be courageous. This goes back to the same phraseology that God had given Yehoshua at the beginning of the Sefer. This is now Yehoshua commanding his armies and his generals to have that same kind of courage. Ki kacha yaaseh Hashem l'chol oivechem asher etem nilchamim otam. Thus will God do to all of your enemies. Ve'akem Yehoshua achreichem v'yimitem v'yitlem ha'chameshet ha'itzim v'yutlim ala ha'itzim ad ha'arev. They were executed and they were hung. They were hung, because they were already executed, until the evening. Then he took them down at night, because that's what the Torah commands. And he hid them, and he buried them in the cave. The rest of the perek is Yeshua going from city to city in a cleanup operation, literally city to city. Makeda, Livna, Lachish, Gezer, Eglon, Chevron, paragraph by paragraph. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 paragraphs describing how in each one he destroyed the city. Didn't leave any remnants. This is the cleanup operation of the campaign, and in this manner he literally clears or conquers the entire southern region of Israel. It's one thing to break the military camp, the enemy on the battlefield. It's another thing altogether to literally follow up city by city and go back so that you remove all of the pockets of resistance that have remained in the home, and you have to do that quickly. This is something the American military has never learned, and they fail. This is their biggest Achilles heel and their biggest failure in every military campaign in the last 10 years. But it's clear, if you win the victory in the battlefield, that's only part one. If you really want to be able to claim that victory, then you need to go back and make sure that there's no military resistance left to threaten your army subsequently.
So I'm sorry, so there's no possibility then for them to reunite. That's the point also.
Reunite, regroup, rearm.
Because of any remnant, the same thing could happen again. In other words, those cities could combine.
They have to be demilitarized. And that's essentially what you have here.
Why are we commanded to always brutally kill these people?
We talked about that last year. The command isn't to brutally kill them. The command is to demilitarize them and to give them the options of either accepting the terms of surrender or leave. But the expression used for a campaign which is not a siege campaign, not a campaign of occupation, but a campaign of either you become loyal citizens or you leave type of conquest, is described here in these terms. We talked about that last year. It would take us a couple of shiurim to rehash it, so I'll leave it. But that's where we left off. Just as a summary at the end of the parak, let's just do the quick summary at the end. Vayashav Yehoshua b'chol Yisrael l'imot Devira, the last city they come to is Devir. And they've gone all the way through this entire area, Yerushalayim, Yarmut, Azekah, Lachish, Hebron, Devir. They're literally going south. Same phraseology that appears for each one of these cities, as he had done to Hebron and to Devir. And at that point, Yeshua had really taken the land. This was really the first major indication that Yeshua had conquered the land. Hahar, v'hanegev, v'hashvela, reading in Pasuk Mem, verse 40. Vayaker lif Yeshua ta kol haaretz hahar v'hanegev v'hashvela v'ha'ashedot. He's essentially taken the mountain, the Negev, the south of Arad and Beersheva. There's not much there in terms of cities. So once you reach all the way down to Hebron and to Devir and to that region, you're essentially in control of the mountain and of the Negev and of the Shvela, because he's been into Gezer, into Azekah, so this is already the plains, the Shvela. V'chol malchahem lo yishir sarid, v'et kol neshama ha'achlim kashir tziva Hashem alokei Yisrael, v'yakem Yeshua mikadesh barnea v'ad Aza, v'et kol eretz goshen v'ad Giv'on. V'et kol ha'malchim ha'ele v'et arzam l'kad Yeshua pam achat, ki Hashem alokei Yisrael nilcham li'Yisrael. In one fell swoop, Yeshua had conquered from Giv'on, down into the Negev, and all the way out to Ekron, Gat, Ashdod, and Aza. So it's one campaign. And in that campaign, Yeshua essentially controls now the entire southern half of Eretz Kana. But Yashav Yehoshua v'chol Yisrael imo al ha-machaneh ha-Gilgala. When the campaign is over, where do they go? Back to Gilgal. That's a major issue for him. They're constantly returning to Gilgal. They will conquer the entire land, north to south. And when it's all over, they'll go back to Gilgal.
Why?
That's the question for the second half of Yeshua. That's the issue in the second half of the Sefer.
So they don't start to settle this land?
Not yet. That's the key piece. Not yet. They conquer, they do not settle. It's a huge problem, and it will come back to haunt Yeshua. It will come back to haunt Bnei Yisrael. It is a huge problem. It was a problem then. It is a problem today. There's a problem in every context of military conquest that you have. Right? If they don't settle, what will happen clearly is it will be repopulated, and who is repopulated by the local Canaanites, and they've got to fight them all over again, and this will become a recurring theme in the second half of Yeshua and all through Sefer Shoftim. But what you see here is the first hint of it. This is the first time you really feel the problem arise. You hear how many cities Yeshua conquers. This city reads like a military, like a map of a military battlefield. That's exactly what it is, this parak. Every city mentioned from Giv'on to Aza to Beershet to Devir to Arad, this entire region, it's all now in Israelite control of Yeshua.
Does he tell Begad
not to? We'll come back to it. We will address it address it significantly, but I just can't do it now. We don't have enough information.
And Gilgal has this, is related to that.
Maybe. Galgal chozer, galgal chozer. It's possible. I mean, it comes from another etymology. It comes from the story of the gal, the heap from the circumcision and the heap of, pardon the expression, heap of foreskins that they put there. That's where the word comes from, the word gal. But galgal is
to return.
It's a circle. That's the campaign.
So now he kills every soul.
No.
Well, I mean, it's
we talked about this. This chapter was the key chapter we used to demonstrate the fact that he doesn't destroy the souls, because, as an example, we used as a city of Gezer. It says there that he killed everybody, and a chapter later, they're not in Gezer and they're not settled in Gezer, and there's an entire Canaanite population in Gezer, and you have to ask yourself where they came from. It means it's a military campaign that was fought until either surrender or retreat. It was a military campaign. This is essentially the thesis that we developed, that we put forward 2 years ago, that the phrase "vayachrima" to destroy it, not to leave a remnant, to destroy every soul, is a phrase the Torah uses not to mean literally destroy every man, woman, and child and destroy non-combatants, but rather to distinguish between a siege type of war and a military campaign on the battlefield. With siege, the purpose is to capture alive and subjugate the population, and therefore it's a protracted battle with a very different style. Yeshua was commanded not to engage in a siege war of Canaan, but to engage in a frontal campaign that would place before the Canaanites the choice of either surrender and loyal and express, accept the terms of living in the Israelite-controlled land, or they can leave, but the terms are to create that what we call the idolatry-free zone in the land of Canaan. That's the story of the campaign in the south. The issues that we need to address, and we're going to start today, we're not going to get there, my fault, but we're going to start today, is the nature of this. I think the key piece of this story from a Tanakh perspective is the nature of the divine assistance in this campaign. The military strategy is relatively straightforward. Surprise attack, middle of the night, move the entire army, take them by surprise, confound them, confuse them, send them running, and then once they're running, so you have them on the run, you have them on the retreat, and you use that advantage to clean up city by city. The role of the Ribbono Shel Olam in this story is really remarkable. Remarkable in and of its on its own level, and remarkable in the context of Sefer Yoshua. What strikes me as probably the most significant miraculous moment in the entire Sefer is this picture of Yoshua and his army running after the enemy, and the need to destroy their enemies. So suddenly the hail comes down from heaven and wipes out thousands upon thousands of soldiers, more than the Israelites killed by the sword. And at the same time, as the hail is coming down upon the enemy, Yeshua turns and he says, "Up, let the sun stand still so that we can have more daylight." So the sun is blinding on the one hand, standing in the middle of the sky, refusing to set, and the hailstorm is destroying the enemy on the other. And you have this convergence of weather patterns and divine assistance that is really remarkable. It's so remarkable that it motivates Yeshua and the people to talk about it in a kind of song and poetry that is reminiscent of Shirat HaYam. Az Yashir Moshe Avnei Yisrael, Az Yedaber Yehoshua. What's the expression? Az Yedaber Yehoshua LaHashem B'yom Tet HaShem Etami Lifnei B'nei Yisrael. Then spoke Yeshua. It has this poetic, flowery, Shira style sound to it. This is really a major, major issue. So what I would like to do is divide this discussion up into two parts. First is to recognize the fact that there's not an insignificant amount of both textual and thematic linkage between this battle and the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. It's almost as if the Tanakh goes out of its way to draw the imagery and draw our attention to the only time in history where we have had miracles of this magnitude. And that was Yetziat Mitzrayim. When was the last time we had hailstorm as a form of attack on our enemy? It's Makat Barat. When was the last time we used the sun, Shemesh, as a form of attack on our enemy?
When it wasn't
there. Right? Makat Choshech. Albeit in contrast, but the notion of commanding the sun to do our bidding in order to bring about the victory against our enemy, together with the Barad, so between Barad and Choshech, the only thing I'm missing in the story is Arba. You have this symbolism or this imagery that are clearly reminiscent of Makot Mitzrayim. Even the phrase Lo yachotz ish et lushono b'nei Yisrael, no man wet his tongue against Israel, is an expression which is very unsavory when you describe it to people, because people don't wet their tongues, dogs do. And the expression comes from Lo yachotz kelev et lushono. It's an expression that comes right out of the story of Makat B'charot. There's two additional phrases here that are significant.
Lo yachvatz kelev
l'shono? Here? Pasuk. It's in the plague of the firstborn, but in Mitzrayim. But here, it's right after they go back to the camp. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. If you take a look at the source page, I've given you a number of I've pointed to a number of textual parallels between the story here and the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So, for example, one of the first phrase when the battle begins is Vayehumam Livnei Yisrael. Vayehumam Hashem Livnei Yisrael. God confounded the enemy before Israel. Confused, confounded by Yehumam. And that phrase appears for the first time in the context of Kriyat Yamsuf, when the fire and the cloud separate the camp of Israel, and Bnei Yisrael go into the dry land between and then. And Mitzrayim goes running after them. Vayahum et machane Mitzrayim, as Mitzrayim goes running into the sea, the Torah says Vayahum et machane Mitzrayim. God confounded the camp of Egypt, meaning he confused them by drawing them into the sea, and then restoring the waters of the sea created this enormous confusion. They didn't know which way was up and which way was down. Vayahum et machane Mitzrayim. We talked about Makat Barad. We talked about the phrase of Le'echvatz Kelev L'shono. Another phrase that appears both here and in Mitzrayim. Ki Hashem Milcham Li'Yisrael. Take a look at Pasuk Yudalad. Pasuk Yudalad is a very interesting phrase. V'lo haya kayom ahu lefanav ve'acharav lishmo Hashem b'kol ish. Ki Hashem Milcham Li'Yisrael. This event was unprecedented. Never before, never again, that God should listen to man, for God fought against, or God fought on Israel's behalf. Ki Hashem nilcham b'Yisrael. That phrase has two parallels to Yetziat Mitzrayim. One, v'lo haya kayom ahu lefanav v'acharav. The notion that this type of miracle was unprecedented, never before nor ever after, is also a phrase that appears as a theme in Yetziat Mitzrayim. In the middle three plagues. No, the last three plagues. The middle three plagues are distinguished between the distinction between Eretz Goshen and and Eretz Mitzrayim. But in the last three plagues, for each one, it says that whatever the plague was, Choshech, Barad Arba and Choshech, in all three cases, the Torah goes out of its way to say that these were types of plagues that never before nor ever again would smite the land. So, for example, you have phrases like, Asher lo haya kamo b'chol Eretz Mitzrayim me'az hayta l'goy, by Makat Barad. Never before has such hail occurred upon the land, from the day that Egypt was founded as a nation. Or, Lefanav lo hayachen arbe kamo v'acharav lo yeken. Never before nor ever again will there be arbe like this type of arbe in Mitzrayim. That was the theme, the notion, the power of God was demonstrated dafka by the unprecedented level of the plague. In other words, Barad by itself is not particularly a symbol of any power, right? Hails everywhere in the world, almost. What was particularly powerful was the fact that this was a Barad in Mitzrayim that had unique characteristics to it, Eish Mitlakacha B'toch HaMayim, but it was described as something which was so powerful and so devastating. Lo haya kamo l'min bechol Eretz Mitzrayim me'az hayta l'goy. Not since Egypt's founding as a nation did they ever have such an experience. And similarly with Arba. With Choshech it doesn't say so, but I imagine it goes without saying that 3 days of darkness is also unprecedented. So the notion that somehow in the midst of this campaign, Hashemesh Pekivandom, whatever took place, was unprecedented, lo haya kayom ahu lefanav ve'acharav, never before, never again, that's a phrase that only appears in the context of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and it immediately conjures up this message that these are miracles that seem to be of the magnitude that we haven't seen since Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Furthermore, ki Hashem nilcham liYisrael, the notion that Hashem is fighting for Israel is a phrase that is taken directly out of Yitziat Mitzrayim, again from Kriyat Yamsuf, when Mitzrayim is frightened, and they say, ki Hashem nilcham lehem b'Mitzrayim, God is fighting this battle against Egypt. And of course, the phraseology of Shirat Hayam, az yedaber Yehoshua, Hashem is reminiscent of the phraseology of Shirat Hayam, Az Yashir Moshe Avnei Yisrael. So thematically and textually, I have a series of miracles and a series of phrases that are clearly reminiscent of everything that took place in the context of Yitziat Mitzrayim, including Makat Barad and Makat Choshech. Okay, that's the parallel. Now what's the contrast? Have we ever discussed the relationship between parallels and contrasts in Tanakh? Almost without question, almost without exception, every textual and thematic parallel in Tanakh has its unique distinction and differences. And it's almost as if the parallels are there specifically to draw attention to the differences. Because the differences would go unnoticed if you didn't have all the parallels. There's almost no two events in Tanakh that are described in exactly the same way without the intent being to describe or to compare where the events differ. Eliyahu HaNavi is part of his campaign. One of the things he does is revives a little child who dies. Elisha, his disciple, one of the things he does is revives a child who dies. Now go read the two stories, put them in parallel and compare them and contrast them. But the stories are almost identical, but they're not. The context is different, the events are different, the events leading up to them are different, and the personalities of Eliyahu and Elisha are so different that the personalities come out in the story when you read them in parallel. There's almost no two parallels in Tanakh that don't have some distinction, and it's usually the distinction that makes all the difference in the world. So wherein do the plagues of Egypt differ from the miracles of this campaign?
Yehoshua says
says for the sin of Seth.
Interesting. Yeshua says for the sun to stop. Yeshua commands the sun to stop. So that's already a reference to Pasuk Yudalad, which says that what was unprecedented here was that God listened to man. What was unprecedented here, lo hayala fanav acharav lishmo Hashem bekol ish, that God should listen to man. Now, you have enormous miracles in Yetziat Mitzrayim. But who's running the show?
Hashem.
Without question. So dramatic is that emphasis that God is running the show. Moshe is virtually a puppet and an unsuccessful one at that. One of the days of Pesach, I made the observation from the Vilna Gaon, an unbelievable voice of the Gra, why Moshe is not on the Haggadah. Why is Moshe not on the Haggadah? So we give all kinds of pshatim about the fact that we want to emphasize that it was God's role and not Moshe's role, and that it was God who took us out of Egypt, etc. Says the Vilna Gaon, very simply put, go back to the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and from its beginning until its end, tell me one thing that Moshe did that was successful. Moshe was a failure in Mitzrayim, an intentional failure, but a failure. Moshe's role, his uniqueness, his contribution, his significance is not in Makot Mitzrayim. It's not in the story of how we got out of Egypt. We got out of Egypt because God needed some human being to stand there with the staff in hand. So Moshe played the role of some human being who stood there with the staff in hand. You could have posted the staff on a pedestal and we would have achieved the same thing. Where Moshe's role becomes significant is post Yetziat Mitzrayim, is post Kriyat Yamsuf, is leading them from Kriyat Yamsuf to Mamad HaSinai. Kriyat Yamsuf was Moshe's moment, Vayaminu Bashem of Moshe Afdo, and from that point forward, Moshe takes over. Moshe is not the miracle worker. I don't need Moshe to be a miracle worker. I need Moshe to be a Rabbeinu, and I need Moshe to be a Navi. The miracle worker could be anybody, because ultimately the miracles come from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So Moshe's role in Yetziat Mitzrayim is played down, and especially Leil HaSeder, where the whole focus is on specifically Yetziat Mitzrayim and the Makot, that's not where Moshe's role was. And therefore the Gra says, that's not where Moshe belongs in the Haggadah. Get to Shavuos, and it's all about Moshe, because it's all about Matan Torah. Here, this story is all about Yehoshua. It's all about Yehoshua's campaign. It's about Yehoshua's strategy. There's not an insignificant amount of strategic depth in this story and strategic brilliance on Yehoshua's part. Do not underestimate the power of Yehoshua's decision, A, to mobilize the army, B, to do so under the cover of darkness, and C, to move the entire army, Am HaMulchama, V'chol Giborei Achayel, and to move them 40, 30 kilometers under the cover of darkness, and to do so in one night, without the enemy knowing. This campaign was won because we attacked the enemy by surprise. That wasn't miraculous. That was Yehoshua. That was all Yehoshua. The whole campaign, the follow-up, the strategy from taking them out down into the valley where it's flat, even the notion of the direction to which Yehoshua leads the army in their retreat. Now, an army can retreat in various directions. When you are the chasing army, you can control which direction your army retreats from. And there's an interesting halacha that says that you're not allowed to enclose an army on all four sides. Did you know that? It's an interesting halacha. In Ochot Melachim, the Rambam, he talks about it. He says when you attack an army, you have to give them an escape route. You have to give them an escape route. You are not allowed to surround the enemy on four sides. Why? There's two reasons. One is because they have to be able to retreat, and this is not an execution, this is a war. And they retreat and they run away, so that's part of the option. There's a second reason. And the second reason is because an enemy that has no access of retreat, has no ability to retreat, will have no choice but to fight. And if you push somebody in the position You put somebody in the position that they have no choice but to fight, you never know what you can expect. So the rule of war in the Torah is you can surround them, but only on three sides. Which side, however, you give them as the retreat route is your decision, not theirs. And what Yehoshua does, and it's not, there's no explicit reference to it in the story, but I think it's very, very simple, is Yehoshua takes a good look at which direction the sun is at. He knows that these armies all came from the south. And these armies all came from the south. The campaign starts in the morning. So assuming the campaign takes the larger part of the morning and the early part of the afternoon, the reason why Yehoshua is so bent on not letting the sun set is because he needs the sun. He needs the sun for two reasons. Number one, he needs the cover of daytime in order to finish this campaign. And number two, depending on which direction the enemy is running, the sun could be either behind you or in front of you. Now, if you're running south, due south, it makes no difference where the sun is. By the afternoon, already the sun is beginning to set. Whereas if you chase them in such a way that you chase them westward, and you've got the sun overhead, then essentially you have the sun behind you, and you're chasing ahead of the sun. If the sun sets, you'll have the sun in your eyes instead of your enemies. If the sun stays overhead and you're pushing westward, then the sun is in your enemy's eyes and on your backs, because the sun is setting westward. So for Yehoshua, it's both the strategic move is twofold. Number one, to keep the sun on his back, and number two, to force the enemy to run not south, which would be the logical course of retreat, but west. And that, it says, it alludes to it. It doesn't say so explicitly, but it alludes to it. It says, Pasuk Yud, Vayirdefem derech ma'ale bet choron. He chased them via the route of Ma'ale bet choron ad Azeka. From Ma'ale bet choron to Azeka, this way. That was an intentional decision. If he can keep the sun behind him, or he can keep ahead of it, then the moment they turn around to look at their enemies, or look at who's chasing them, they've got the sun in their eyes. That's a strategic move on Yeshua's part.
But does he know that the sun is going to stay there?
That's part of the Shemesh B'Givandom story. Assuming that he's the one in control and he instructs God to hold the sun in that position, we'll talk about the nature of that miracle. That's our next piece. But assuming that I take that story at face value, he's in control of the show. The miracle here is described as the fact that God listened to man. Even that is interesting. The miracle isn't described in terms of the depth, the power of this miracle. What they sing Shira over isn't the fact that the entire cosmos was held in abeyance for those few hours while the earth stopped rotating on its axis long enough for the sun to stand still. The miracle was that Yehoshua spoke and God listened. Lishma Hashem b'kol ish. Whereas in Mitzrayim, God is in control. The miracles are everywhere. Moshe is taking his instructions from God left, right, and center. Bottom line, the difference between the plagues of Egypt and the miracle here is that the plagues of Egypt were the war. The war was the plagues of Egypt. God waged war against Mitzrayim, against the gods of Egypt, against the pharaohs of Egypt, and he did so through the plagues. Makatam, Dam, Tzfardea, Kinim, all against the Nile or against the ground, the plagues against Paro himself, the Makat Bechorot against the dynasty of Egypt, Makat Choshech against the sun of Egypt. These were plagues against the deities of Egypt and against the icons. But God was waging war. And we were innocent bystanders. We couldn't even watch this thing take place. There's a whole notion of the fact that Bnei Yisrael were hidden in their houses from Makat Bechorot. We weren't even entitled to watch, let alone take a part or take a role. Whose military campaign is this here? It's Yeshua's campaign. Yeshua is fighting his enemy. The role of the miracles, and there are essentially two, the hail and the sun. Both of those miracles take place after the initial campaign. They're both miracles that are taking place upon the retreat. They are necessary. Does Yeshua need the hail and the sun to stand still to win this battle? The battle was won the moment the battle started. And the enemy was confused because they didn't expect all these Israelites to show up on the doorsteps of the Givonim. And that was and they broke their camp. And they start the run. They start to flee. That's where the campaign ends. Yeshua is unsatisfied with that. Yeshua is unsatisfied just with defending Givon. Remember, the purpose of this campaign was to defend the city of Givon. The moment the armies of Yerushalayim and his allies retreat, Givon is saved, and the war should have ended. Yeshua is unsatisfied with that. He's got his enemies on the retreat, on the run. He's in control of the show, and he will continue that campaign to a cleanup preparation city by city. For that, he needs backup. So he calls for backup. He calls for reinforcements. And who and what are his backup and his reinforcements? A little bit of hail never hurt. And a couple of hours of extra sunlight never hurt. And that's his backup. So we can compare the miracles to the plagues of Egypt all day long, but at the end of the day, they're so diametrically opposed in purpose and in context. This is a Yeshua-driven campaign. This is a military campaign of the army of Israel. But they need backup. So God gives them backup. And in Mitzrayim, God is fighting this military battle against Egypt, and we're sitting and hiding in our houses. And that difference makes all the difference in the world in the context of where we're at in Jewish history and in Sefer Yehoshua. Miracles of this magnitude, were they to be just on the level of Yetziat Mitzrayim, where God comes in and runs the show, would set us back three generations.
So it's like Yehoshua is taking responsibility.
Yeshua is driving. God has given him that responsibility. Yeshua is driving. Yeshua is in the driver's seat. And that's the power of this Pasuk Yudalev, where it says that the miracle here, Lo ayaka yomahu lefanav acharav lishmo Hashem b'kol ish, is that Yeshua is driving the show and God is listening to whatever he needs and giving him back. Why that's so significant, I need one more piece to explain, and that is the next discussion, which is the nature of this miracle. How big was this miracle? And once we understand how big this miracle is, we can then put this story into a context of a broad philosophical scope of the role of God versus the role of man in the conquest of Canaan. Because what it looks like right now is I have the story of Jericho, and let's say the level of divine involvement. So let's put Jericho is the first campaign. Let's put that up here. This is ground level. Let's put that, right? The wall's coming down, trumpets blowing, Yeshua has a little bit of a role to play, etc. So let's put that up here. Then we get to I, first campaign they lose, second campaign they win. God tells Yeshua the strategy, but Yeshua ultimately wins, makes the campaign. And the third military campaign is Givon. And suddenly the sun is standing still, and the earth is stopping to spin on its axis, and the moon is not setting. And when you've got miracles that are not only not only national, and not only global, they are cosmic. You can't stop the sun setting without changing the entire nature of the universe. So I would put that up here. Then we're going to get to another story, which is the campaign of the north, and there's no miraculous involvement of God whatsoever. It's all Yeshua. And we're on a zigzag. I don't know what's going on anymore. So we'll have to sort that out, make heads and tails out of this one, Bezrat Hashem, next week at 9:15.